Now, I don't know how I move on from that really in one way, but I think what we'll do is we'll take the complete opposite of stillness and silence now, which is entertainment and culture broadcaster and journalist Owen Sweeney. Good afternoon, Owen.
How are you, Brendan?
And Björk's new album, Fossora, I think we're calling it, is out next week.
Yeah.
And she's released three songs off it so far. Even if people aren't a fan, the three videos are extraordinary pieces of, and the songs are extraordinary in their own way. But look, we're going to have a little appreciation of Björk anyway.
Album
Alexi,
number
you
10.
You have a stack of vinyl in front of you. 35 years she's around in our lives now.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to conceive of a world without Björk now at this stage. But yeah, the Sugar Cubes is 1988, I think, their first album that kind of, you know, would have entered yours and my kind of orbit. Birthday was the kind of the key song off that. Dave Fanning would have played it to death on RT2 FM, and I suppose that's how she would have entered all our lives. And I was just thinking, actually, I remember, I suppose, Top of the Pops or one of those sort of programmes where she would have appeared singing Hit, say, in 1992. Mm-hmm. That's 30 years ago. And then most recently, she was the Seeress in Robert Eggers' The Northman, the film that came out this summer, which is kind of very, very much a Björk type of movie, you know, scripted with the Icelandic poet Sjón, who she's collaborated with. And that's a key aspect to Björk as well. It's kind of the collaboration element. But she's only in the movie for about 2 minutes. And you know, obviously, movies nowadays, to try and give it, and again, a very Björk thing as well, very visual kind of two-dimensional poster image, very strong kind of visual identity to the still images that they used to advertise films. And Björk got her character got her own poster, which, you know, not every character did. She's only in it for 2 minutes, and she doesn't have any eyes, and she's kind of got seashells over her eyes, which again, it's all very Björk.
Yeah. So when she appeared initially, it was a bit of a David Bowie Starman. Like, she was this kind of really weird, quirky creature.
Fully formed,
from outer space.
Yeah,
was it just that she was Icelandic, or
I think that plays into it, doesn't it? Like, with all these great pop stars and great artists, and I'm always kind of curious or wary of using the word artist, particularly when pop stars refer to themselves as artists, you know, you kind of bristle a small bit. Are you really? But yes, with Björk, she kind of, and as you say, with Bowie, we project things onto these people. And I suppose the fact that she was from Iceland made her that little bit more exotic. Her music has since obviously filtered through various geographical points, particularly London and New York and Spain, and of course Iceland. I suppose she's always been that little bit different, and it was very easy to kind of look at her as kind of this manic pixie.
Yes, that was the original creature of her, wasn't it?
Exactly. And I suppose, and she does, and there's interviews there, and she I suppose, look at it again, like Bowie, no more so. She kind of creates her own history then and tells a few tall tales to entertain herself while being asked the same questions. And particularly in America, it's kind of like, well, do you people believe in elves? Do you know Stephen Colbert, you know, for example, would have asked her that question, a little tongue in cheek, but kind of almost a little believing it too. And so she is kind of, those adjectives are always applied to her, aren't they? Ethereal, elfin, you know, glacial, quirky. She's the queen of quirk and all of that, but she's so much more than that. She is a consummate artist, and that, as you say, with the visual stuff, with, you know, with her own clothes, with her own album covers, with her videos, and with the music as well, and kind of the progression. She's only done 10 proper albums, shall we call them, in 30 years, because she only had to do 10 proper albums. She's kind of walks and marches to the beat of her own drum, no less than Kate Bush.
Yeah.
A great hero of hers.
It's to call it a career is to understate it. Mm. It's a kind of an artistic arc, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And always pushing forward.
Exactly. I suppose if you go back to kind of 93, 95, the first two albums, you know, kind of that was very much kind of that dance, trip hop, kind of, you know, London, Bristol scene, and the club scene. And then she has kind of expanded there. And I mentioned collaborations. She was collaborating with people like Nellie Hooper, and who worked with Massive Attack. And obviously Bristol gave us Massive Attack, and Tricky, who she obviously worked with and was romantically involved in it as well, and wrote with, and Portishead and bands like that. But also then she would collaborate with people like Steve McQueen, the artist. Do you know what I mean? And she was at that wonderful intersection of the 90s.
Yeah.
British culture, which was pop music and art, you know, kind of, you know, the Damien Hirst of this world, and kind of, you know, the new British artist, all that was happening, or the young British artist, all that was kind of meshing together. I mean, it's where we get Gorillaz from, is that kind of vibrancy, do you know what I mean, between kind of, you know, dance music and visual representation. And then also, like, film directors, but then video directors like Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze and stuff, who would have done videos with her as well. So she's the full 360.
So it's spitting out in all directions.
I mean, she is a walking museum, and I mean that in a kind of, sorry, it's a walking art gallery, not a museum. A museum puts you in the past. She's very much kind of a consummate and performer. She's always not always performing, but she's always presenting something different, and each album has a different character.
Yeah.
And she embodies that character. It's fascinating.
We'll take a montage of the Björk that people know and love first. You forget how many flavors there were and everything, and like it's also quite almost a show tune then, kind of light electronica, a bit more industrial there with the third one with Army of Me. And then that last one there was
played out with David Arnold, of course, and it was very 90s as well, wasn't those lush strings, and she's kind of very much into string arrangements. And she, look at her first album, I know we're talking about her 10 grown up albums, but her first album came out when she was 11, largely we're told at the urging of her mother, and you know, it's kind of
folk.
Well, it was kind of, she was 11, so it was kind of cover versions of kind of, you know, Icelandic tunes. I think she had a hand in one of them, but
was she a child star in Iceland before we ever heard of her yet?
It's sort of, well, again, you know, is the artist themselves the best kind of and most reliable witness to their own story? Her mother kind of ushered her towards the stage, and as I said, they recorded the album when she was 11. She says herself now that she vowed then that she wouldn't put her name to anything unless she was 100% satisfied with it, and she felt ownership of it, which is why she largely releases her own material only. These are all kind of cover versions, or more or less, and she kind of regretted being put out there. But she was born in 1965 in Iceland, in Reykjavik, and you know, punk then happened in the 70s, and Iceland was changing very rapidly, obviously, societally speaking. So again, no less than Bowie, kind of grew up in post-war Britain. That all those influences, the context is very important from when she came. She was in punk bands from, I suppose, the age of 12, 13, you know, and the Sugar Cubes. And most importantly as well, she became a mother at the age of 20, you know, so she was a pop star then. She was a mother first and then a pop star. And, you know, her son, she's now Björk the Granny. She's now a granny, do you know what I mean? But so she has lived a full life in every aspect, and she has chronicled it, but not exploited it. Do you know what I mean? So she had a personal kind of connection with a lot of her lyrics. Her lyrics are very kind of, I suppose, the imagery of a lot of natural imagery, but also she draws on her own personal experiences, particularly in more recent work with the breakdown of her marriage, etc. And now her son and her daughter. In fact, the new album features a song about her daughter leaving home, and kind of, you know, she's sending herself up as the clingy mother. Do you know what I mean?
It's very Björk the clingy,
Björk the clingy mammy, as well as Björk to do, who does an album all about bloody voice sampling. Do you know?
Yeah. So without losing people now, take us through the kind of the development and the phases over the 10 albums.
Right, well, very simply, I suppose, the first two albums, Debut and Post, and what a statement to call it Debut as well, and what a brilliant photograph, one of my favourite album covers of all time. It's just a very simple
the
photograph.
Mohair jumper.
The mohair jumper practically leaps out of, you know, kind of the monochromatic image, and her hair and her hands in front of her face. And that's very definitely her kind of painting herself as the neophyte. And then she suddenly turns into this kind of, you know, post-clubland, multicoloured, I suppose, urbanite. So the first two albums go together. They're the ones with all the hits on, most of which we heard there in that montage, and very trip-hoppy and very kind of 90s, and the ones people would be most familiar with. The third album then, Homogenic, is, I suppose, more Icelandic. It has what she called at the time patriotic strings added to it. It was her going home and also retreating from the spotlight. And a lot of people have images of Björk. There's Björk in the swan dress at the Oscars. There's Björk attacking a photographer.
Oh, yeah.
And the photographer and that encounter made headlines around the world because, again, it's quirky Björk from Iceland, so she must be a bit mad. But obviously, she said at the time that she was protecting her son, who was being harassed by all these paparazzi. So that was very much kind of a retreat album, the third album. The fourth album, Vespertine, is kind of, it's sexy album. It's, and Bjork, and that's another key aspect of, she's very conscious of the body and physicality and her own sexuality and her own sensuality. And particularly, it's always interesting as you age, but this is, that's album number four. Again, it's kind of micro beats. Album number five, this is the one, this is Crazy Bjork, as people would call it. This is Madonna. This is the one with all the voices. And basically, they're sampling different voices. There's choirs on it. And it is largely a cappella, but not a cappella in the way that you might imagine in church.
Did she hold on to people as she kind of got more artsy?
Yeah, in terms of collaborators.
No, in terms of her audience.
In terms of audience, I suppose. Well, this is the thing. And again, the easiest allegory to draw is one with Kate Bush, because again, like Bjork's greatest hits came out 20 years ago and it's her only compilation album. Okay. That's not a criticism of her chart success. I mean, it is a statement of fact. But she didn't have to do anything after that. She's been on the same record label since 1988 with the Sugar Cubes. One Little Independent, as they're now known. So she has only ever had to do things when she wanted to. So
and this
she's
is been when people, this is when and people are their best. This is when they make art,
and
when
Kate
they're
Bush,
not
Kate
under
Bush
pressure.
Is the same. Kate Bush's only compilation album came out in 1986, the year after the now, you know, being comprehensively revisited, Hounds of Love.
Yeah.
You know, and so she hasn't had to anthologize her own work ever since and has benefited from that. And so that's quite interesting. And there's a great scene, and I was thinking, coming in, the Mike Leigh movie, Life is Sweet, or not Life is Sweet, the one after A Secret Life, anyway, where Sally Hawkins is cycling around with her pal and they come upon a Cure poster and they're kind of going, oh God, we were really into them back in the day, weren't we? And this is 1996. Do you know the Cure are about to go on tour again? But it's almost the same with Bjork. So she stays with people who want to stay with her and people who might have drifted away. And that's important, kind of, I suppose, around the first couple of albums. If the Bjork you know was in the 90s, go back, and if you have streaming, go and listen. And I would urge people to listen to things like Volta, which is more recent, where she went back to pop and Timbaland worked with her. Biophilia, that's kind of the eco one. It's a bit crazy.
Yeah, which
she
was
developed
a huge
an app.
Project.
Yeah,
wasn't
she
it?
Developed
yeah.
it. Kind of, that's the fold. People talk about 360 with publishing and kind of, you know, film rights and stuff. Bjork is developing an app, all sorts of computer technology, interactive technology, remixing the songs. And that was a tour. She actually came here with that. She would have come here with that to the Electric Picnic. Vulnicure is the eighth album. That's the breakup album. It's hard going, Brendan, but I urge everybody to listen to it. It does come with a health warning for the heartbroken. And then the last one, then Utopia, is bigger, grander and louder. She refers to it as her Tinder album, which is Bjork back in the market.
And so now the 10th album, and let's take a listen to, I think we're going to listen to Ancestress, are we? Yeah, you have a clip of that. And she said this is a song about her telling her mother's story, I think.
From her own point of view. She was very close to her mother, but her mother was a homeopath and quite a hippie character and made headlines 20 years ago again when she went on hunger strike for environmental reasons in Iceland against dam building. And she since came off the hunger strike, but she said at the time she never used, I've quite a famous daughter, I don't normally use her name, but Bjork completely supports me in this. And her mother since died in 2018. Bjork has moved home from New York, and yeah, this is her interacting with her own past.
And I think Fossora, I read, is a name for a person grounded in the earth, kind of digging.
A digger, yes.
This is back to mushrooms and the earth seems to be
that's
the theme
right.
here.
And the bass clarinet.
Okay, so this is Ancestress.
My ancestress clock is ticking her one spike. Rebellion is fading. I am her hope keeper. A sure hope is there at all times.
It's got an amazing video
okay.
as well, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Extraordinary. So look,
it's not all difficult.
Have you heard the full album?
I haven't yet, but I can wait a week.
Yeah,
So, okay. And I've actually been revisiting some of the choicer aspects of her catalogue.
I think a lot of people will go back and start revisiting after all that. And we're like, she is a really important artist of the last few decades, isn't 100%. She?
100%. Yeah. The Army of Me video, she blows up a museum in it. But, you know, you can see MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York in 2015, when she was living there, did a short run exhibition. But if Pink Floyd or David Bowie have, you know, Victoria and Albert kind of exhibits to their work, you can do this at home, to be honest. Put on the records. Watch the videos. You can spend an entire day watching her videos, and she's still someone who cares about the visual representation of her work.
Okay, Owen Sweeney, thanks a million. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.